Now, I've been wanting to chat to this bloke for quite some time. I always listen to his show on a Tuesday. And the good news is that he's going to have his very own show starting on Friday. It's Big Daddy Liberty. Sifra, good morning. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, thank you very much for having me on the show. We've been saying I need to be here for a while.
Threatening, more like it.
It's crazy.
So absolutely amazing news that from when is it, this Friday?
This Friday at 9 a.m.
It's going to be a weekly show. What's it called?
It's the Big Daddy Liberty Show. So yeah, for those of you who are interested in all things current affairs through a classically liberal lens, join in and get involved in the show.
So some of your views are quite controversial.
Yes.
And I see that Twitter sometimes gives you quite a hard time.
Fantastically so.
Is it fantastically so?
It is.
Does it ever get to you?
Short answer is no, because, you know, I live in a country of 58 million South Africans, you know, different cultures, 11 languages. Conflict is inevitable, and conflict is a good thing. That's why if you look at our constitution, it enshrines one important liberal value, the idea of freedom of speech. Right. You know, freedom of speech isn't to talk about the weather and all these nice things and how the traffic is bad in Johannesburg.
It's
to talk about controversial issues, things that rouse some people up and things that we can agree on, and to find consensus and sometimes just to disagree.
I mean, it's very interesting you say that, because like I take a look at our SMS line, and Dov says, I think that we shouldn't be allowing any Chinese to come to South Africa right now. Now, I don't agree with him, but before you said that, I would have not even read out that SMS.
Yes.
Because I find it offensive and silly, but I guess that is the job. That is the job, to have those types of conversations.
Absolutely. And this is the thing about the show itself, and perhaps who I am as a character, Big Daddy Liberty.
Yeah.
All things freedom. I place the fundamental importance on freedom being the most important political value that any South African can enjoy.
Right.
You know, regardless of who you are, wherever you are, because if you think about it, Howard, South Africans have never enjoyed freedom. Whether you go back to the days of colonialism, where one grouping was favored over the other, apartheid, the same notion where, you know, you had one form of government suppress the rights and freedoms of many others. And even today's government, Howard, you know, today's government is a strongly socialist, communist, and essentially very nationalist government. It doesn't actually favor freedom. It views people in groups. It segments them and argues that politicians in this iteration of government should have the power to choose the winners and losers. That is not a free society.
But is it government, or is it really the politicization, using race as a form of a weapon in politics? Because our constitution does allow for freedom, and it doesn't discriminate really by race. Yes, you could argue that certain policies, maybe BEE and these types of things, segment people into race. But there's a basis for that. Whether one agrees with it or doesn't agree with it, there's a basis to do that. The politicization or of race has come more from individuals who have seen an advantage.
I'm not sure that's true. The Constitution, to a large extent, facilitates a form of discrimination. In fact, politicians have been quite savvy in, you know, giving it a term, quote-unquote, fair discrimination. There's no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the point has to go back. And if you're going to build a fundamentally different country that is genuinely built on democracy, that is genuinely built on freedom, then you cannot copy any form or any iteration of the past, whether that is an apartheid past or a colonial past. And unfortunately, today's iteration of government copies certain segments of that. How, in particular? By allowing politicians the power to be able to pick winners and losers in society. If you give any politician that power, then it doesn't matter what avenue they use, whether it's race or gender or any other sort of superficial thing that really doesn't define who we are. And this is the problem. So a lot of what I talk about on the show is answering the question of how do you therefore then build a free, property-owning and prosperous society in South Africa that doesn't use race, that is genuinely non-racial, and essentially allows and focuses on families and not politicians. You see, we've never really had this. So a lot of the conversation is around that. And if you, the dear listener, are really interested in that fresh conversation, information and, you know, fresh perspectives, then the Big Daddy Liberty Show is exactly what you need to listen to.
All right. Tell us, give us your background. Where did you grow up? Where was your, what's your history?
Yeah, but yes. So I'm a Zulu boy from KZN. I grew up in a township called Mlazi. I was raised by a single parent, physically handicapped. And, yeah, a lot of what I am today is the, let's call it the benefit or Hashem given, privileges of having had, you know, a good mind and a good attitude. And from that, benefiting from various bursaries. So I went to good schools, as I was young. And, yeah, I effectively am a Durban boy, you know, through and through, but, now find myself in Johannesburg. But you know, if you want to know who I really am, you know, I'm someone who's cut their teeth in political communication. You know, I began in, you know, in fact, I've worked nearly every job from being in government to parliament to party politics, and even in the private sector. And all these skills I've effectively just put to good use in the brand that I now have, you know, this Big Daddy Liberty brand, which I started in 2010, which is essentially this character who, because of the frustrations I've had in various jobs that I've gone through, whether it was in government or politics or even the private sector, I said there must be a better way to communicate with South Africans and actually change this country. So that's who I am. That is actually my innate passion, if you will.
All right. And, politically, where you mentioned, politics, which parties have you been associated with along the way?
Historically, the Democratic Alliance, right. You know, basically assisting them with a lot of their political communications, only because they're actually classical liberals or used to be classical liberals. But that's part of the frustration of being someone who, doesn't necessarily like party politics, but is just, is something ideologically. So I'm actually a classical liberal.
Right.
You know, I don't have a party these days. I don't talk for any parties, nor do I any, you know, shill for any party, but I do advocate for certain political ideas that actually I believe will build this country. And a lot of those are essentially answering the question of how do you build a free society? That's a conversation we barely have right. in this country.
Well, I think we were too scared to have it as well in 94, and it's something that I often speak about is we were so keen or desperate to move on as quickly as possible that we didn't have some of the very difficult conversations that we've needed to have. And I do think that it's not just people using race as a political weapon that causes that as an issue, but the fact is that there is a real amount of hurt and issues in the past that we haven't actually dealt with. We haven't really discussed some of the more difficult things because it's much easier for us not to. And South Africans by nature like to get along, and we want to we want to all feel good about each other and about ourselves. So as a result of that, we actually haven't had those conversations.
It's also easier to have that conversation if you are part of a society that is actually growing, that is creating wealth, that's distributing that wealth adequately into homes, that favors families, and really places emphasis on families and individuals. Because really, as a classical liberal, I talk a lot about the individual, but really we're a family society.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to understand what a classical liberal is, because you use the word fairly frequently. The word is thrown around in a lot of different environments, but I, for one, would like to understand exactly what it means. If you have any questions, any thoughts, 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'm Howard Feldman. Joining me in a studio is Big Daddy Liberty. So, we're talking about his new show that's coming up from this Friday at 9 a.m. All right, the question that I asked you before is, what is a classic liberal?
Absolutely. Look, a classical liberal is an individual who essentially believes, where I began, for example, this conversation, that freedom and personal freedom, civic freedoms, if you will, are the most important political value in society. So we answer this question in two ways, really. One, what is the relationship of the individual to the state? And two, what is the role of the state? Now, in each of these two answers, there's three bullet points, if you will, and I'll be very brief. So what is the role of the state? The role of the state is always limited and essentially allows individuals and families to be the biggest players in society. So the role of the state would be to, number one, protect us from foreign aggression, the idea of a border, a government that protects an army in particular, that's there. And of course, the president, some form of diplomatic corps. The second one, of course, is to protect us from domestic threats against our life, our liberty, and our property rights. So if a criminal, Howard, comes and accosts you and say, look, Howard, give me your cell phone. Not that the criminal will know your name, but, you know, give me your cell phone. And he pulls out a knife. There's two elements that are being threatened in terms of your stake there, your life because of the knife, and of course your property, the man wanting your cell phone. So we expect the government to have a police force, in order to look out for us as individuals, as families in that regard. And the last role of the state, of course, is in a country of 58 million people, 11 languages, multiple racial groupings, of course there'll be conflict. Of course there'll be some form of disagreement. So you need a judiciary that mediates our disputes. That's the third role of government, to mediate our disputes. So that's the role of the government through a lens of a classical liberal. So the other then is the individual's role or relationship to government, which is one, that the state, and these are more instincts really than a hard-line ideology, because there's various iterations of who we are as classical liberals, but my instincts are as follows, that the state should do less and that the individual should do more. This idea that the state should be the nanny of who we are, whether it's on a racial basis or whatever, is just absolutely silly. It prevents people, especially poor people, from being able to pursue their opportunities and their happiness. So the state should do less and the individual should do more. The second one, of course, is the state should own less so that the individual should own more. The idea of low taxes, low regulations, allowing people, especially the poor, to be able to say, this is mine. So I would be opposed to, for example, things like expropriation without compensation, because that is essentially the state arguing that it owns everything in society and you're merely a beneficiary of those things. And of course, the last one is the state should spend less so that the individual should spend more. That comes back again to the idea that we should not be taxing people to death, whether they're poor or rich. Allow people to build a market economy based on voluntary transactions. And those in our society who are able to pursue their knowledge, their skills, and their opportunities would be the major beneficiaries of that, as opposed to what's happening now, where politicians essentially crowd out the individual in the market. So that is a classical liberal. Those two questions are how a classical liberal, generally speaking, would answer them.
Right. What's interesting is that we've seen this over and over again in specifically in South Africa, where we've lost confidence in the state.
Yep.
Individuals, companies have actually stepped in to take control. And
absolutely,
how did we see that? One of the first signs we saw of that was when the banks got together and said, look, we're no longer going to bank the Guptas.
Yeah.
Instead of it coming from government downwards, it actually came from companies upwards. And that enforced the system. That started the ball rolling, so to speak, in that sense.
Well, how it even goes, further back than that. I mean, South Africans for a very long time have realized that the state is just absolutely terrible at doing pretty much anything. Look at, for example, when you go home, Howard, inevitably you likely now have, again, I'm not saying you specifically, but if you look at the data, more and more South Africans are becoming self-reliant. We're buying solar panels, JoJo tanks for water. These are 100%. Things that are supposedly the state's responsibility. Mm. Right now, as we speak, for every one police officer we have in this country, there's five private security officers. That tells you a story that South Africans would rather the private sector take over certain aspects
of
their lives.
Well, you see, in everything, our kids go to private schools, we go to private hospitals and doctors. We have in our areas private security.
Absolutely.
So all of these things have actually been taken over by the private sector.
And by the way, it's not just middle class rich people that enjoy these private services. Even poor South Africans, if you look at a lot of the data that's produced by the Institute of Race Relations in their South Africa survey, you can actually see a lot of poor South Africans are opting for private options where they can to supplement the weaknesses of the state. Healthcare is a good example.
Right.
My township of Umlazi, if I took you back to Umlazi in the early 90s, you'd maybe find, you could count the number of private doctors who have a private practice in that township, one of the largest townships in the country, not more than five, plus minus. But today, Howard, there is literally a proliferation of private doctors in fact, most townships, and indeed private businesses generally in most townships. Why? Because poor people too recognize that they would rather offer something into the market at the lower end, of course, and have that service come to them. So that doctor, for example, won't charge, 300, 400 rand for consult. He might charge 250 or even 150 in some cases, but caters to a lower end market. And that's what the market, the free market does. It provides those options, which if you get the politicians out the way, you'll get more of.
All right. right. And this, something I have to absolutely ask you is, in all of this, through this whole journey, you are converting to Judaism.
Yebo, yes.
Have you lost your mind completely? Like, why would anybody want to do that?
It's a love for Hashem, Howard. Okay, you know, if I got you down on this track, you know, it'll be another conversation in itself. But, yes, I'm at Waverly Shul. Love my rabbi, Rabbi Bukhat. Shout out, homie. and yeah, you know, it's a journey that I'm looking to embark on as I formerly Magaya.
How long have you been in the process?
Not at all, actually. So this year will perhaps be the first. And
oh, I see.
As I said, it'll be a very long story as to how this came about. But, yeah, hopefully I'll have you on my show to have that conversation.
That'll be very interesting. So, have you felt for a while a connection with Judaism?
Long story short, you know, the first conversation I had was with, Rabbi Feltman down in Gardens, Garden Shul. And, you know, the conversation I had with him was literally, I feel like I have a Jewish soul, but I can't put words to it.
Right.
And his words were, look, immerse yourself in the community. Get to know who we are. Take the time because this is a very hard journey.
Yeah.
And that was about 2-3 years ago.
Right.
And I've done exactly that. So it's something I can't explain, Howard. It's driven by an innate love for Hashem and the need to sort of
observe. I would imagine you can't explain it. I would imagine that it's not difficult. Something because it's not happening on a rational level. And for the reason that I ask the question is for somebody who's so deeply rational and is so seated in rational logic and thought processes, this is so counter to that.
Absolutely.
Which is so interesting.
But it's very much part of my life, and you know, anybody who follows me on social media would see that.
All right. Exciting news is that from this Friday, you are, first of all, how do we follow you on social media?
Find your favorite fat boy on all social media. That's on Twitter, Facebook. Just search at Big Daddy Liberty. And of course, very soon, the Big Daddy Liberty Show will be online.
All right. And Zanati, one more thing. Do you know that he's also intermittent fasting?
Oh, yes.
But he's taken it to a ridiculous level.
So we're all intermittent fasting.
Yeah, everybody,
okay.
Anyone who's anyone is.
Yeah.
Except ask him how long his last fast was.
72 hours.
Wow.
That is the best way to beat obesity, by the way. You know, people.
Stop eating, yeah.
Intermittent fasting and carnivore or keto for those who want to do a ketogenic diet, but it really is the best way
to
beat
obesity.
So I've
been doing 16-8. For the last 3 weeks or so, or 4 weeks now. And I do find it great. But do you have to do like those 24/7? Is there a system?
Look, I'm morbidly obese. So, you know, it's really one of the most effective ways to treat that. So what I do very briefly is that I'll begin like today, one meal a day. Now my next fast, is the next 2 days or 48 hours. Then I'll have another meal. And then after that, it's 72 hours or maybe 96, depending on how I feel.
96 hours.
It really is.
I would feel sorry for our listeners if I were had a 96 hour fast.
And then the cycle begins again. So want to beat obesity? This is one of the best ways to do it.
Amazing. So we're going to follow that journey as well.
It's all along.
It is indeed. That's how I know about it. So Friday, starting this Friday at 9 a.m. Very, very excited. And good luck with that. I have no doubt it's going to be fantastic.
Thank you, Howard. Thank you very much for all the listeners too.